Arshav Bo opens with the last three of the ten makos. We've discussed in the past a number of different ways to understand how and why the makos are divided in this way. Not five and five, or not all ten in one parsha, but rather seven and three. But at any rate, one of the final makos, the penultimate makah, in fact, is that of Choshech. And within the makah here, there is a meeting that takes place between Paro and Moshe. And that is described in Perek Yud, Pasuk Kaf Dalet. It's in the middle of the thick, literally the thick of the plague, of Choshech. And Pasuk Kaf Dalet reads, Vayikra, Paro al Moshe, Vayomer lechu abdu es Hashem. He's once again caving in. Go and serve Hashem. Just leave your animals here. Even your children can go with you. And Moshe asks for more. He's looking for a total break. No, even you will give us animals. Don't tell us to leave our animals here. In the event, we'll even take some of your animals. And our animals certainly will go with us. Lo tisha'er parsa. And how does Paro react to this? Vayichazek Hashem es lev Paro velo aval l'shacha. Hashem, again, as we discussed last week, whatever the meaning of Hashem hardening Paro's heart, does not wish to send them. Vayomelo Paro lech me'alai. And Paro now ends with a bit of a menacing or a threatening tone. Hishomer lecha. Take guard, take care. Al tosef ro'os panai. Do not see me again. Ki v'yom ro'os cha panai tumus. The next time you see me or try and see me, you'll die. Now, this final segment of Paro's confrontation here with Moshe seems to break from all of the other plagues, in the sense that if we can begin to see a pattern, it's basically that Paro is very conciliatory at the time of the plague, and then he goes back to his old ways when the plague has passed. We never really find that Paro toughens up during the plague itself. It's always afterwards. Moshe davens, the plague goes away, and then Paro hardens his heart, or Hashem hardens his heart, and then he refuses. But here, in the midst of the plague itself, he makes an offer, Moshe refuses, and then Paro gets rather bellicose and quite threatening in his way. And the question is, having gotten progressively weaker and made more and more concessions over the course of the 10 plagues, how are we to understand that Paro almost gets like his second wind here? He gets his final hurrah to speak in this menacing way to Moshe. What has happened here? And this question is discussed by the author of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chaim Michael Epstein, in his commentary to Haggadah Shal Pesach, which is entitled Leil Shimurim. And he prefaces by raising another question. It's a famous section in the Haggadah Shal Pesach, which begins Yochol Meirosh Chodesh. And what does Yochol Meirosh Chodesh mean? Yochol, I may have thought. The mitzvah under consideration, of course, is the mitzvah of V'higadot Levincha, and the quotation from Chazal says, Yochol Meirosh Chodesh, I may have thought that this mitzvah begins already from Rosh Chodesh. Which means that the Seder would last 2 weeks. And although sometimes it seems that way, as we know, it isn't so. But I may have thought that the mitzvah already begins from Rosh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar, to that end, the Torah says, V'igadot Levincha Bayom Hahu. It's only on that day. But of course, in true rabbinic fashion, the Aruch HaShulchan is as much interested in what I may have thought as in what actually turns out to be the answer. Anyway, the answer is it's only on Seder night. Okay, on Pesach and Seder night. But it is true that had the Pasuk not told me that, the fact remains I may have thought it's a viable, what is known as a Hava Amina, what I may have thought, that it's from the beginning of the month, Yochol Meirosh Chodesh. And the question, of course, is why would I have thought that? I can understand that on Seder night itself there's a mitzvah to talk about it. Why would I have thought, indeed, that the mitzvah begins from Rosh Chodesh itself? I mean, Rosh Chodesh is a special day. You say Musaf and you say Halal and you say lots of things. But to say that the mitzvahs of Seder night or Vigadat Levincha would also have begun at Rosh Chodesh, where does that come from? That's an interesting shaila. Perhaps not always on our minds as we read these words in the on Seder night itself. And Aruch HaShulchan explains, as we know, in a focal part of Parshas Bo is the Korban Pesach. And in addition to all the halachas of korbanos and everything else that it represents, there's another element within the Korban Pesach. It is specifically a sheep, and that has a very direct connotation with regards to us and Mitzrayim. For as is known, the sheep was considered something of a deity in Mitzrayim. And therefore to take that and to sacrifice it and to use it as a korban was itself a repudiation on our part of the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, and truth be told, of any part that we prior had in Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, which there was, as we know from Chazal, Halala of Avodah Zarah, as is outlined in the Navi itself, the Navi Yechezkel. But at any rate, it's an interesting, if we may say, choice of deity. The sheep doesn't seem to be that powerful in that way. However, as we know, often the objects that were chosen for Avodah Zarah were representative of higher forces. They were not themselves necessarily considered to be the source of any particular power, but they embodied and represented a higher force. For actually, the sheep, the Tale, is one of the mazolas, it's one of the constellations, and that already is considered a source of flow of input into the world. We talk about Akum, Avodas Kochavim, Umazolos. The notion is that they are aware of how energy and power comes into the world. They ascribe independent will to those entities and begin to petition them and worship them. That's the mistake of Avodah Zarah. And in fact, the word Mazal, as Mefarshim point out, actually comes from the word Nozel, which is to flow. Because it's the flow of energy. It's the way to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has this input into the world. As we know, each of the months is represented and associated with one of the mazalos. And the mazal of Tole is actually the mazal for the month of Nisan. And now we can perhaps begin to get a deeper understanding of Paro's position. As we know, the Makos came at a rate, largely speaking, of one per month. There was the week of the Makkah and then 3 weeks of warning, or according to another opinion in Chazal, 3 weeks of the Makkah and 1 week of warning. I think the Mitzrayim would have preferred to paskin like the first opinion, but either way, the process of each Makkah takes a month, which means that if we work backwards, and the first of the Makos is 10 months from Nisan. Well, if Nisan is the month that has the Mazal of Tole, that's the month where that constellation is particularly strong, and that's the constellation with which Mitzrayim are associated. That's a good time for them. It's a time of strength for them. As the Makos begin, they are a long way from Nisan. I mean, it's just passed. It's not going to help them anymore. They're 10 months away. And 10 months is a long time, especially it must have felt like a long time that year. And so it is that as long as Nisan doesn't seem within reach, and Nisan, we could almost say, is Egypt's month, and it's ever elusive, so Paro has no choice but to capitulate. But according to that Cheshbon, when we consider the timing of the plague of darkness of Makas Choshech, it was the last, and Paro knows it's the last plague before Nisan. This is it. It actually happened a month before Pesach. It actually happened on Purim, interestingly enough, because there's already a remez for the concept of Purim itself, which is La Yehuda Maisa Ora, as we say, Ulechol B'nei Yisrael Haya Orba Moshvosam, dark for everyone else, light for B'nei Yisrael. That's a forerunner for La Yehuda Maisa Ora of Purim. But at any rate, this for Paro is decisive, because he understands that if he can only weather this plague next time round, he will be on home turf in terms of the calendar. It will be Egypt's month again, and he has supreme confidence in the power that Egypt gets from the constellation of the Ptolemy. And that is why, if when Moshe's answer is not entirely satisfactory to Paro's offer, he feels emboldened, and he finds within him the resources and the gall to begin to threaten Moshe, because next time round, it's going to be Nisan, everything will change. That explains Paro's behavior. Much to Paro's disappointment and surprise, nothing really changed for the better in a month's time. In fact, a month later, the Jewish people had left. But the point is, how does that happen? Was he mistaken? And here we come to the idea again that we've mentioned many times. In natural terms, so to speak, Paro was correct. He was correct to perceive that Nisan was a month where Egypt would be strengthened. That's its own type of nature. What he did not factor in is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is in charge of all of nature, can change the nature of the months. Part of what happened as a prelude to Yetzias Mitzrayim is that the month that's meant to represent strength for Egypt, and that mazel, which was their mazel, was subdued or subjugated or overcome, and perhaps even reversed. And this, of course, is something that Paro could never have seen coming. In this respect, therefore, when we appreciate that Pesach represents almost like the apex of this reversal, because as surely as the moon gets waxes and gets bigger and more powerful, as the month progresses, reaching its highest point in the middle of the month, that was the point that Paro would have expected to be strongest. And that actually was the night of the defeat of Mitzrayim. But it's a process, and the process begins with the beginning of the month, on Rosh Chodesh. And once we appreciate that the redemption for Mitzrayim in this final stage was a process that began on Rosh Chodesh, with the beginning of the month, then we can appreciate, says the Aruch HaShulchan, why the Haggadah says Yochel Mirosh Chodesh. I may have thought that we begin to tell the story and celebrate from Rosh Chodesh. In the end, it is not so. But to understand why we think it is so, because if we celebrate at the anniversary of the redemption, redemption in its broader sense began on Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, I may have thought Yochel Mirosh Chodesh. To that end, Talmud Lomar by Yom Ha'u. So as we can appreciate, the Perushim on the Haggadah are value not only for Seder night themselves, but for also giving us insight into the parshas which pertain to Yetzias Mitzrayim, from Shemos to Beshalach. So that is a comment of the Aruch HaShulchan and Paro's behavior in Makas Choshech. Now, as we mentioned, Perek Yud Beis of Parshas Bo introduces and discusses Chag HaPesach, or Chag HaMatzos as it's called, and the Korban Pesach. And I'd like to take a look at two psukim in Perek Yud Beis. They are, Pasuk Tesvav, if we begin, which introduces the Chag of Sukkos, of Pesach, pardon me. And there's much to say on each of these psukim, but we'll begin with reading Pasuk Tesvav. Shivas yomim matzos tochelu, 7 days you shall eat matzos. Ach bayim arishon tashbisu zomim batechem, on the first day, which as we know is the day before Pesach, you must get rid of all chametz. Kikol ochel chametz v'nichrosa, for anyone who eats chametz, they will be cut off, kares. V'nichrosa nefesh ahim yisrael, it's very severe, as we know, and that's therefore we're hypersensitive to chametz. From the first day to the seventh day, as Mefarshim point out, that's qualifying the eating of chometz. That's not qualifying being cut off from his nation. No one gets cut off for a week. It's about eating chometz during that week. From the first day to the seventh day carries the penalty of kares. Well, The next pasuk I'd like to see is pasuk tet zayin. The very next pasuk. Uvayom arishon mikra kodesh, uvayom hashvi'i mikra kodesh yiyeh lachem. As we know, Pesach, although it's 7 days, but not all days are equal. The first and the last day are Yom Tov, and in the middle is what we call Chol HaMoed. What's interesting is, both Pasuk Tes Vav and Pasuk Tet Zayin refer to the Yom HaRishon and the Yom HaShvi'i. Yet if you look carefully at those two references, we will see that they're not exactly the same. For in Pasuk Tes Vav, when it says the concluding words, Ki kol ochel chametz v'nichrasa ha'nefesh ha'i, etc., Miyom ha'rishon ad yom ha'shvi'i, the words rishon and shvi'i are written chaser. Chaser in the sense that they don't have all the letters that we would expect. The word rishon has no vav at the end. The word shvi'i has no middle yud. Now, with the nikud, you can work it out, but nonetheless, they're not written out in full, so to speak. Contrast that with the next pasuk tetzayin, uvayom arishon mikra kodesh, uvayom hashvi'i mikra kodesh, yelachem. Again the yom arishon, again the yom hashvi'i, but here it's rishon with a vav. Here it's shvi'i with a yud in the middle. And if we may borrow an expression, therefore, manishtana hayom arishon and yom hashvi'i in pasuk tetzvav from that of Pasuk Tet Zayin. And a very interesting, of clearly, we'll be looking very closely now at these two references. A very interesting answer to this question I came across is as follows. There is a concept with which we are, of course, familiar, and that is Mosifin Mechol Al HaKodesh, to add on from the holy day, both before and afterwards. That's the idea of bringing in Shabbos a little bit before, and of course one can bring in more than a little bit before. From Lag HaMincha, we add on after Shabbos, and also Yom Tov. Interestingly, the source for this idea, and there are those who understand that it's actually a Doraisa idea itself, it comes from words with which we normally associate another drasha. That's with reference to Yom Kippur. For Yom Kippur in Parshas Emor, it says, "V'inisim es nafshosichem," Yom Kippur, "betisha lachodesh ba'erev," for psukim with which we should be familiar, "betisha lachodesh ba'erev," on the ninth in the evening. And the Gemara is actually quite yekish when it comes to this posuk, because the Gemara says, you know, the erev isn't really the ninth; it's the tenth. "Betisha lachodesh ba'erev" is actually a contradiction, because the Erev of Yom Kippur is the 10th. So it should say Basiri Ba'erev. How can it be Batishi Ba'erev? I believe we are more familiar with this issue because it yields the famous mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. That's where the Gemara derives it from, as if to say, given that the mitzvah of Yom Kippur is really the 10th, but the pasuk brings in the 9th to the mitzvah, you don't have to fast, but it's part of the mitzvah to teach you that whoever eats on the 9th, it's like he fasted on the 9th and the 10th. That's the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. It's the one day a year where it's a mitzvah, min haTorah, to eat. We like to stay in practice for the rest of the year, but that's a mitzvah there. But however, the Gemara elsewhere in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and in other places learns from here the idea of Tosefes Yom Tov and Tosefes Shabbos, as if to say, you know what you learn from the fact that it says Batisha Lachodesh Ba'erev? It talks about Yom Kippur as being the ninth, because part of the mitzvah is to begin on the ninth, should bring in some of Yom Kippur on the ninth. And then through the repetition of phrases, Ba'erev, Me'erev, Ha'erev, Tishpatu, Shabbatchem, by the time we're finished, you've got before, you've got after, Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's the source of the idea of Tosefes. And thus we have the concept of adding on a little bit to Shabbos and Yom Tov, both before and after it. And we can add on more than a bit. In summer, there's many places where they what they call early Shabbos is actually to bring it in a good hour before, or whatever it may be. And there's a fascinating discussion that takes place regarding the nature of this added time in the summer or whenever. When a person brings in Shabbos an hour early, what is the status of that hour? How do we look at that hour? And the way that this question comes out is by a very interesting discussion that takes place between the Maharshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, and the Taz, the Turei Zohar, Rabbi David Halevi. The Maharshal is actually in Hilchos Sukkos. It's in the Tshuvos, but he discusses Hilchos Sukkos because if you bring in Yom Tov early, then you can bring in Shmini Atzeres early. Now, the Maharshal says the following. Even if a person has brought in Shmini Atzeres early, but he shouldn't really have his Yom Tov Suda until it's actually Nacht. And the reason why is because it will end up in a bit of an awkward situation. You see, as much as he's brought in Yom Tov early, but Lamai said still Sukkos. So he's going to have a Shmini Atzeres meal in the Sukkah. And that's already not so much in the spirit of Shmini Atzeres, which is after Sukkos. So it's a bit of an awkward arrangement. And therefore, in deference to this, says Marshal, you davened early, fine. But when it comes to your Suda, wait till Nacht. And then it's absolutely not Sukkos anymore. And then you have your Suda in the house, leaving aside other issues of Suffolk and Kiddush and all of that. Okay, that's the Maharshal. But the Taz, who quotes this tshuva of the Maharshal, the Taz says, I don't see what the problem is. In other words, if you really have brought in Shmini Atzeres early, then you have thereby said goodbye to Sukkos. In which case, you can have your Suda straight away in the house because it's not Sukkos anymore. And that's his position. So it's an interesting kind of discussion. When you brought in Shmini Atzeres early, is it still Sukkos? Except you brought in Shmini Atzeres early? Or is it not Sukkos anymore? Because you've transitioned early from Sukkos to Shmini Atzeres. And really, the question at the heart of this discussion is, what is the measure and the nature of this hour, of this extra time that you added on from the Yom Tov to before Yom Tov? There's two ways to look at it. One could say, perhaps, that what you've done is, by bringing in Yom Tov early, you know, Yom Tov hasn't happened yet. Yom Tov, it's not going to happen till Nacht. But what you've done is that you've extended the Kedusha of Yom Tov. In other words, Yom Tov has Kedusha, and you can extend that Kedusha. It can spill out into the time slot somewhat before Yom Tov. As surely as, by way of analogy, you can have a Korban, which has Kedusha, and you can apply the Kedusha of that Korban to something else, which is not a Korban, but it has Kedusha's Korban. So too, on a Friday, and you brought in Shabbos an hour early, it's still Friday. When you bring in Shabbos early, you've brought in the Kedusha of Shabbos into Friday, but it's not Shabbos yet. That's one possibility. Or could it be perhaps even more than that? Could it be that the possibility of what we call early Shabbos or early Yom Tov is that you are actually starting the Chag early? You've actually brought the starting point of the Chag into the previous day. All things being equal, the Chag would begin at Tzeisah Kochavim. You elected to begin the Chag an hour before Tzeisah Kochavim. And of course, as we can appreciate, this now is the difference in outlook, in view, between Maharshal and the Taz. According to the Maharshal, the concept of Tosefes Yom Tov only affects the Kedusha of Yom Tov, which means that if it's Friday and you bring Shabbos early, you've brought an hour of Kedusha Shabbos into the final hour of Friday. But it's not Shabbos yet. And therefore, if it's the seventh day of Sukkos, it will not stop being Sukkos until the stars come out. And if you're bringing Shmini Atzeres early, so then you have drawn the Kedusha of Shmini Atzeres into the last hour of Sukkos. But it's still Sukkos. And if you have a Suda, it's got to be in the Sukkah. And that's going to be funny because you've already brought in Shmini Atzeres. So don't do it. So wait. Whereas according to the Taz, it is the other way. According to the Taz, when you bring in accept Yom Tov early, Yom Tov has begun. And if Yom Tov has begun, then the day before Yom Tov has ended. And the time frame called Sukkot is no longer, which means, Gesundheit, you can have your Yom Tov Suda. It doesn't need to be in the Sukkot because it's not Sukkot anymore. You said goodbye to Sukkot when you said hello to Shmini Atzeres. That is the way of understanding the machlokas between Marshal and the Taz. Very interesting, as you can appreciate. There are many attendant ramifications from this question. Two exceptions, however, as if to say, two aspects with which all would agree that it's not yet the next day. Firstly, when it comes to Seder night, you see, the mitzvahs of Seder night need to be performed at night, but Erev Tochlu Matzos, and so to everything else. And because they need to be performed at night, all will agree that even if you bring Pesach in early, it won't help you. You can't have your Seder during that extra hour that you brought to Pesach in early. Because even if we'll say that Pesach has begun, the Chag of Pesach, the time frame, has begun an hour early, but it hasn't become night an hour early. You can't change day into night. What you're saying is Pesach begins in the final hour of daytime of Erev Pesach. That you can say, but it's not night yet. Interestingly, and just as a very nice tie-in for our Yochol Mirosh Chodesh, because as we may remember, we begin by saying Yochol Mirosh Chodesh. I might think that you can fulfill the mitzvah from Rosh Chodesh. No, Talmud Lomar Bayom Hahu. What's the next stage? Ah, Ibayom Hahu. If it's on that day, Yochol Mi Ba'od Yom, I might think that you fulfill the mitzvah the day before. No, Talmud Lomar Bavur Zeh. Babosh Bishashish Matzah, Umoror, Monachon Mefanecha. I hope I'm not making anyone hungry here. There's a certain Pavlovian association as you hear Matzah and Moror, certainly at that stage. But the question, of course, is how could I possibly think that you could fulfill the mitzvah the day before when I look at the words, Bayomahu, on that day? What is it about the words that day that make me think that I could possibly do it on a different day, the day before? So the Sefer HaMeir Le'olam, one of the great Acharonim, explains that here what I might have thought is, what if you bring in Pesach early? Then I may have thought that you can start Pesach mi ba'od yom and then fulfill these mitzvahs. But to that end, the Torah says no, because Ba'avor Zeh needs to be when Matzah and Moro Menachon Mefanecha, and Matzah is only at night. Bringing Pesach early doesn't bring in the night early, it brings in Pesach into the final daylight hour of the 14th. Of Nisan, and therefore that's what the Haggadah is saying. Very interesting way of understanding that Yochol mi ba'od yom. The second area, which will bring us back to our Psukim, where you've got, it has to be the Yom Tov itself, are with regards to the penalties and consequences of violating the mitzvahs of the Chag. If a person brings in Pesach early, it means he's got to be off Chometz early, even in terms of Pesach. However, the penalty of v'nichrisa, of kares, does not go into Tosefes. As much as a person can elect to accept the Chag early, but the punishment for violating the mitzvahs of the Chag always stays within the natural parameters of the Chag itself, not till nightfall. That's the second point. And with this in mind, say the Mefarshim, we can understand how all of the above is alluded to in the two references of day 1 and 7 in Pasuk Tes Vav, and Pasuk Tet Zayin. How so? Because the difference between Pasuk Tes Vav and Tet Zayin, as they refer to the first day and the seventh day, is that the Pasuk Tes Vav is talking about the penalty or the punishment for eating chametz on Pesach, day 1 to day 7. The second Pasuk Tet Zayin, is talking about making it a Yom Tov, Mikra Kodesh. Ah, so now we understand. Because when it comes to the punishment of Kares, That doesn't follow Tosefes into earlier and later. It is only true for Pesach itself. And that is why the words Yom HaRishon and Yom HaShvi'i are written Choser. They're written, there's nothing added there. It's just the bare minimum to give you the word, indicating that what this Pasuk is talking about is only true of the Chag in its most limited sense. Namely, from stars out until stars out. That's why in Pasuk Tes Vav it's written Chaser. However, in Pasuk Tetzayim, when it talks about making it into a Yom Tov, all of a sudden, Yom HaRishon and Yom HaShvi are written Male. They're full. Why are they full? Because the Vav is added on, the Yud is added on, because you can add on to the Yom HaRishon and the Yom HaShvi'i in terms of making it a Yom Tov, not in terms of expanding the borders of the penalties for violating those mitzvahs. So this is a fascinating insight on the level of remez to understand how the very same expression, Yom HaRishon and Yom HaShvi'i, features differently, indicating the difference in terms of topic that the two psukim are discussing. Okay. Now, moving on, there is a pasuk which could not fail to catch the attention of the Mefarshim, and even before the Mefarshim, if we may say, and that is Perik Yudbeis, pasuk Mem, which describes the duration of our stay in Mitzrayim. Perik Yudbeis, pasuk Mem. And the pasuk reads, "Umoshav b'nei Yisrael asher shvu b'mitzrayim." The stay of b'nei Yisrael who were in Mitzrayim when they was there. Shloshim shana va'arba meir shana, 30 years and 400 years, or as we would say, 430 years. Now that, of course, is very interesting for a number of reasons. Firstly, we were not in Mitzrayim for anywhere near that amount. That's number one. And number two, even as we will, of course, set the clock or have the clock ticking from earlier on, we cannot help but compare the term mentioned here, 430 years, with a term originally forecast to Avram of 400 years. And that's really our point of reference. In Parshas Lech Lecha, the Bris Ben Abisarim, Hashem says to Avram, Yodoa Teda, Kiger Yazarach Haberes Lelahem, Vavodim Inuosom, Arba Meos Shona. So how is it that in Parshas Lech Lecha, the duration, however you configure it, is forecast for 400 years, but then in Parshas Bo, in our Parsha, it is related as 430 years. And here, again, the basic Parshanut, to see the different approaches of two of the great Rishonim, Rashi and Ramban. Each one how they address these issues. Rashi explains, firstly, to appreciate that, as far as Rashi is concerned, as we know, the Bris Ben Abisarim begins with the birth of Yitzhak. As soon as Yitzhak is born, life is not the same for anyone, and no one is really treated with the same understanding and respect. Ki ger yazarach ha-be'eretz lalahem, even as they're in Eretz Yisrael. And we find the word Geirus is used from that point with respect to even Avram and Yitzhak and so on and so forth. And therefore, says Rashi, when it speaks about Moshe b'nei Yisrael asher shvu b'Mitzrayim, it's not that the entire duration was in Mitzrayim, but the entire process which culminated in them being in Mitzrayim was, again, that number of years. We still need to account for 430. It is a matter of note and interest that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Megillah and Daftez that this is actually one of the items that was changed for the translation of the Torah into Greek under the auspices and at the behest of Talmai HaMelech. Right? King Talmai, as the Gemara is, as is well known, he took those 70 Chachamim, he put them, each one in their separate cubicles, there's no communication one with the other, and he told them to translate. And there was something of a nace there, although the whole thing was considered a tragedy, but there was this great siyata dishmaya that they judged there were certain things that it was valid and necessary for them to change as they translated. And each of them intuited exactly the same thing, which means all of the transcripts came out the same, although there was no communication with each other. And one of them, interestingly enough, was was this question, because they all added Moshe ben Yisrael asher shvu b'Mitzrayim uvishar arotzos and other lands. It's very it's fascinating that they all gauged that this is something that would so trouble Talmai. I mean, he must be reading very carefully. I mean, halavai, the entire Jewish people read the Torah as carefully as they gauged that he would read it. Because he's going through and he's saying Moshe ben Yisrael b'Mitzrayim. He said, what do you mean? How can it be? I mean, that's a level. And one could say there's many psukim that one could raise questions like that. But somehow, this pasuk, it was considered to be imperative to change, because the change is not a small thing at all. And they all change it. Now, it is true, so if the clock of 400 years has started ticking from the birth of Yitzhak, which it does, and if you make the cheshbon from the birth of Yitzhak, it's very easy to see through the psukim, it is exactly 400 years from his birth until Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. But what about the 40 years? Pardon me, the 30 years. And Rashi says with regards to this that the extra 30 years began before the birth of Yitzhak, because it was 30 years from the time that Avram was told, as if to say, the broadest shadow, shall we say, of the Bris Medeb Yisarim is from the time that Avram is told about it, and that was 30 years before the birth of Yitzhak. Now, that statement itself is also taking a certain position here. It's based in the Seder Olam, which is one of the oldest Midrashim we have. Except the point is that the Seder Olam tells us that the Bris Ben Avisorim, when Avram is told about the future, happened earlier than most of the other events in Parshas Lech Lecha. The Torah tells us that in the beginning of Lech Lecha that Avram was 75 years old. For Avram, ben chamesha, b'shanei mishevim shana, b'teisa mecharan. But Yitzhak was born when Avram was 100, which means the Bris Ben Avisorim was when Avram was 70, which is 5 years before the beginning of Lech Lecha, which means, perforce, that we invoke the concept of Ein Mukdam U'Meucher Batorah, that the Torah does not always follow chronological sequence of events, historical sequence of events, which means that what takes place towards the end of, or more correctly, is recorded towards the end of Lech Lecha, Bereishis Perek Tes Vav, Bris Ben Avisorim, actually happened before the beginning of Lech Lecha. And that's how it is. Interestingly, there are indicators in the pasuk itself that the Bris Ben Avisorim happened earlier. It is not part of the chronological flow. You find, for example, that in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avram is 75, Hashem appears to him and says, I will give your Lazarcha etinus aratazos. I'll give your descendants this land. How does Avram respond? He builds a mizbeach. It's good news. But we know in the Bris Ben Avisorim, when Hashem told him he's going to give this land to his descendants, Vayomer Avram, how does he respond? How do I know? B'ma'eda ki rashena. How do I know that that will happen? Well, however you understand Avram's question, it's clear that in the beginning of the Parsha, or more correctly, events described at the beginning of the Parsha, he fully accepts it. But the two prokim later, events described there, he does not accept it so easily, because that happened earlier, says the Ksava Kabbalah. That happened when 5 years before, when at 70, he says, B'ma'eda. 75, he has come to accept it and builds a mizbeach and rejoices over it. There is also a very interesting comment of the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, quoted in Tosfos in Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin. Because even in Pasuk Tesvav, you find that it's split into two. Perek Tesvav. The beginning of Perek Tesvav, it's after the war with the four kings and the five. And Hashem takes Avram, Vayotzeyaso Achutza, famous psukim, and says, count the stars. You can't count them. They're too numerous. That's how your descendants will be. A few psukim later, we have the Bris Ben Avisorim. And towards the end of the Bris Ben Avisorim, the pasuk says, Vayehi Hashemesh Lavo, the sun began to set. So Rashbam says, will someone please explain to me how in the beginning of the Perek, he's told to count the stars, which means the stars have come out already, and then 10 psukim later, the sun sets. You see from here, says Rashbam, these are two completely distinct historical episodes. And the one recorded later actually happened much before. And before sunset. And this is the position that Rashi is adopting here. And that's where you get your extra 30 years from Avram age 70 when he received the Bris Ben Avisorim till the age of 100. Interestingly, Rashi does not mention any of this in Parshas Lech Lecha. when the Bris Medrash actually happens, because from a certain point of view, it's not necessary to talk about it. Rashi responds to the issues as they come up. The issue of how old Avram was at the Bris Medrash doesn't come up in Lech Lecha when it's recorded. It comes up in Bo when we hear 430 years, and Rashi, and now go back to Lech Lecha, and you have further insight and further background, further knowledge. There is another point of interest here, because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Beis, that there was a certain group of people who tried to leave Mitzrayim early. They are Shevet Ephraim. And it worked out very badly for them. And they left 30 years early. Where does that timing come from? Because they put so much stock in starting the clock from the very beginning, they actually started the 400 years from when Avram was told about it, which meant that as far as they were concerned, the 400 years were up 30 years before they actually were, because the 400 years begins with the birth of Yitzhak. In total, from the Bris Medrash Sarim, it's 430, but apparently they couldn't wait. And the result was a disaster. So this is the position of Rashi. If we could summarize, Hashem forecasts in Parshas Lech Lecha 400 years. Parshas Bo tells us we were there for 430 years, which is a more expanded understanding of the process. The 400 years themselves, as Rashi, begins with the birth of Yitzchak. The extra 30 years are the 30 years prior to that, when Avram was 70 years old and experienced the Bris Medrash Sarim, where he was told about all of this. Quite a different approach can be found in the writings of Ramban. And actually, according to Ramban, the 400 years should begin with the Bris Medrash Sarim itself. It should begin from when Avram is told about it. That's the fuller reckoning of the 400 years. In which case, we may ask, well, then why is it 430? If in reality the clock starts with the Bris Medrash Sarim when Avram is 70, so then why do the 400 years become 430 years? Says Ramban, the 400 years were forecast for the Jewish people, as was the situation at that time, when it was forecast. But things can change. People have free will. As we know, the Jewish people did not bear themselves with distinction in every respect. There was a certain degree of deterioration, and that led to additional years for the Bris Medrash Sarim. That's a chiddush. As if to say, 400 years is not set in stone. 400 years is the term for galus, as incurred at the time it was forecast, but there can be additional time. And moreover, Ramban is of the opinion that it could be that there would have been more time. Except something else happened. Life became unbearable, the Jewish people began to daven, and Hashem heard their prayers and stopped the galus. You see, that leads us to another question. We say, as a central part of Yetzias Mitzrayim, "Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Aviseinu," we cried out, and Hashem heard us. What does it mean He heard us? The time is up. His time is up. You have to ask. It's an interesting question. What if we wouldn't have cried out to Hashem? But the time is up. So He's going to leave us there just because we didn't ask to leave? Time's up. Time's up. But the point is, says Ramban, no. Because since there were these extra years for penalty time, and there could have been even more. What stopped, as if to say, the 400 years were up 30 years before we left. But we incurred additional years. And the only thing that stopped us even incurring more years, that's when Hashem intervened as a result of our tefillah. That's another force with the reaction of Geula. And we find similarly, the Jewish people, in response to misdeeds, ended up being in the Midbar much more than they were originally intended to. Right? They're meant to be the only, but this time next year they're meant to be in Eretz Yisrael. You see from the pasuk. But things happened. There's no guarantees. And 1 year became 40 years. And that's why, interestingly, says Ramban, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'dor revi'i yashuvu hena, which is also part of the Bris Medrash Sarim, the fourth generation will come back, and everyone is now working it out. Who's the fourth generation? Those are long generations. I mean, from then till who is it? And Ramban says, the fourth generation had long passed. You don't have to work it out. Fourth generation was if things as they should be, but things were not as they should be. And there were additional years, and in the end it was not the fourth generation that came back. As surely as it was not 400 years, it was 430 years. So it wasn't the fourth generation, it could be the fifth generation. And therefore, says Ramban, perhaps we have a different perspective on Bnei Ephraim. Bnei Ephraim left 30 years before everyone else. Says Ramban, in terms of the Cheshbon, they were right. It really was true that the 400 years began. What they didn't factor in is that even when the 400 years are up, it doesn't necessarily mean it's time to go. But they were ready to go. So this then, quite different, is the Ramban's approach to relating to all of the above pieces, so to speak, to understand exactly how to explain these psukim. So that's Rashi, Ramban, classic discussion with regards to the Moshe Bnei Yisrael. I'd like to conclude by presenting an explanation of the Chasam Sofer. And although every Dvar Torah is special and unique, there are certain things that one comes across once in a while. And it relates to Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel. Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel. And the Pasuk reads, Vayomu Moshe La'am. We're out by this stage. Pasuk Perek Yud Gimel. And Moshe says, Zachor Seyam Azeh Asher Tostim Mitzrayim Beis Avodim. Remember this day that you left Mitzrayim, the house of slavery. Ki v'chozek yad hosi Hashem eschem mizeh. Hashem took you out with a strong hand. V'lo yeachel chametz. And chametz shall not be eaten. Now, there's two questions. Firstly, just in terms of simple parshanut, the prohibition against chametz, eating chametz, has already been mentioned more than once in Perek Yud Beis, and we needed to know it already for Leil Pesach itself. What then is being added by a further iteration and reference to the issur of eating chametz? V'lo yachel chametz. We know that already. Secondly, it seems that the parts of the psukim of this pasuk are connected. Remember the day that you left Mitzrayim, Hashem took you out with a strong hand, b'chozek yad, and chametz shall not be eaten. It sounds as if v'lo yachel chametz somehow commemorates the fact that we were taken out with a strong hand. How does A lead to B? How is one a commemoration of the other? What's chametz got to do with chozek yad? Now, on a simple level, perhaps we can understand that chozek yad refers to the strength that HaKadosh Baruch Hu unleashed against the Egyptians to the extent that they threw us out. They're afraid for their lives, kulanu meisim, and they threw us out, which then led to, as we know, the fact that the dough wasn't able to rise, which means historically, history almost like caught up with the mitzvah. There wasn't time for the dough to rise, which means now when you avoid chametz, in addition to fulfilling the prohibition against avoiding chametz, which was there even beforehand, it has the added element of remembering the fact that Hashem took you out bechozek yad. And why bechozek yad? Because if you didn't leave bechozek yad, the dough would have had a chance to rise. But because it was bechozek yad, it was such a show of force, and they responded by expelling you as quickly as they could. That led to there not being enough time to rise. That's how not eating chametz has this additional element of remembering leaving Mitzrayim b'chozek yad. But the Chasam Sofer has a different approach. If I may say, food for thought. The Rambam, in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, in Perek Aleph, Halacha Zayin, says as follows. Ha'ochal min ha'chametz atzma b'pesach. If a person eats chametz itself on Pesach, kol shehu, even a minute amount. Hareze osur min ha-Torah. That is a violation of a Torah prohibition, even a minute amount. Shene emar lo yeyachel. Because the Torah says, shall not be eaten, even a minute amount. Although Rambam goes on to say, there's no incurring kares unless it's a kezias. But even less than a kezias, still a Torah prohibition. V'lo yeyachel chametz. So what has the Rambam told us? That even consuming a minute amount of chametz constitutes an Isser Torah. No penalty of kares, but it's an Isser Torah. The problem is, We know that. The reason why we know that is because, as far as the halacha is concerned, a minute amount of anything that's prohibited is a Torah prohibition. It is what is known as chatzishir. Chatzishir is asur min haTorah. That means that a person will only incur a penalty for eating non-kosher food if it's a gezayis, but even a minute amount is forbidden on a Torah level. So chametz is the same as everything else. Chatzishir is asur min haTorah. But if it's the same as everything else, then why does it need its own pasuk? Lo yachel chametz. Just put it together with everything else, and it's chatzishir, minute amount. And Mefarshim point out, we're not going to get into the details, but there are certain specific cases where chatzishir would not apply, but when it comes to chametz, a minute amount is always prohibited from the Torah. That is the import and consequence of this special pasuk, v'lo yachel chametz. But why is chametz different? Again, manishtana mitzvah azos, mikol mitzvahs, that there's a special pasuk saying under all circumstances, even a minute amount. Says the Chasam Sofer, a truly stunning explanation. The concept of chozek yad, Hashem took you out with a strong hand. What is a strong hand? I mean, these are terms that we come back to constantly. What's yad chazaka? What's zero netuya? What is chozek yad? In what way is it considered to be strong? So the Chasam Sofer says, the concept of chozek yad is that normally when people merit what Hashem does for them, so to speak, they help. They help him. That's their part. That's their input. They provide merit and Hashem responds and then it works easily. In an absence of merit and Hashem, so to speak, has to do the whole thing himself, in the absence of spiritual input on the part of the Jewish people, that's called chozek yad. That's called strength, as if to say, he needs to carry the whole thing. He needs to finance the whole thing. The idea of the Yetzias Mitzrayim being bechozek yad means the Jewish people did not have sufficient merit to finance or to deserve Yetzias Mitzrayim, but Hashem took them out anyway. It is true, and we should add, and never forget, that there were these great distinctions of B'nai Yisrael. They didn't change their language, they didn't change their names, etc. and so forth. Yes, but all of those were not sufficient to provide active merit. They maintained a certain definition of the Jewish people, identity, that allowed them to be taken out of Mitzrayim when the time came. But as the pasuk says, at Erim ve'Erya, they were naked and bereft of mitzvahs. Now, The chiddush of the Chasam Sofer is, so firstly, chozek yad refers to that concept. Hashem has to carry them out, so to speak, has to finance the whole thing. How does this find expression in the definition of the Jewish people themselves? There's an ongoing question as to when the Jewish people began. Who was the first Jew? Who was the first Yisrael? And there are those who say that it was Avram Avinu, as if to say, by virtue of his coming close to Hashem and electing to perform the mitzvahs that he did and forming that connection, he becomes the first Yisrael. Which means the distinction called Yisrael, which sets him aside categorically from the nations of the world, happened with Avram. He attained it. And so did Yitzhak. And so did Yaakov. But a parallel chiddush here is that prior to Matan Torah, it could be attained, but it could also be lost. As if to say, once the Torah is given, a person's Jewish, their children are Jewish, that's it. But before Matan Torah, it was based on merit. It could be attained, but it could also be lost. Which means that the full description of the lower state of the Jewish people, at that time we call them the Jewish people historically, is that they'd actually lost. They'd failed to hold on to the status of Yisrael. Hence, when they were taken out, it had to be bechozek yad. Hashem had to carry them out. And that also needs to be remembered, because it's part of remembering the kindness of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But how is it remembered? We have a concept called shiurim. There are certain minimum significant amounts. The Rambam has the following to say about shiurim, and this is in Hilchos Melachim, towards the very end of Mishnah Torah. In Perek Tes, Halacha Yud. B'nai Noach are also forbidden to eat certain things. Avram and Ahai specifically. and basar min achai. Says Rambam, chayev al eiver min achai val basar min achai bekol shehu. The obligation, the penalty for Ben Noach, for Eiver Menachai, he's only got one thing, he can't eat Eiver Menachai, but that penalty is incurred even with a minute amount. Whatever happened to Kazayas? Shelo nitnu ashiurim ela liYisrael bilvad. Shiurim, Kazayas, and all of that whole concept only exists with regards to Yisrael. For Ben Noach, they still have mitzvahs, but there's no shiurim. When the Torah says don't eat, it means don't eat anything. And there's no minimum amount to incur liability. It's any amount. Says Chasam Sofer, what we see from these words of Rambam is that one of the characteristics, shall we say, of Am Yisrael is that their prohibitions carry with them shiurim, or accompanied by shiurim for liability, minimum amounts. For Bnei Noach, no. And this now becomes embedded in the halachas of Pesach. The Torah presents a prohibition with no shear, with no minimum shear. And that sounds like you're not even talking to Yisrael. Correct. That is part of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. As if to say, when you look at this pasuk, and the pasuk forbids outright, even a minute amount, which is anomalous, it's not the norm. Now again, there's no punishment, but it is a special pasuk dedicated to forbidding even minute amount of chametz, which almost sounds like That's for Bnei Noach. That's not for Yisrael. But it's said to Yisrael because it's a reminder of how they came out of Mitzrayim. And that is how you have a vestige or a remnant of an almost like a Bnei Noachic prohibition within the mitzvahs of Pesach. And what does it remind you? Ki bechozek yad hotziach Hashem Mitzrayim. Hashem took care of bechozek yad. Bechozek yad means he had to finance the whole thing. Where were you? Unfortunately, largely absent, which is expressed in having lost the status of Yisrael, and that is reflected in one of the prohibitions of chametz. Fascinating analysis of the Chasam Sofer. As you said, plenty to think about. We'll leave it over there for this evening.